Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we explore our feels about fringe factions.
Fiction. Factions. He's distracted because I purchased myself a keyboard that lights up for no reason whatsoever.
The pretty lights. I can't.
And a mouse with more buttons than I know what to do with, so.
There's yeah, that. It looks like a Kree weapon, which
it does.
that's a cool side effect. Which leads us into our topic today.
Was not expecting that.
We're going to talk about Captain Marvel, and also Comicsgate, and the precursors to. I lead with Comicsgate because I had to do research because I had a friend who asked me about Comicsgate. He's a illustrator, Joshua Warren. I'm going to try to say his. No, I'm not going to try to say his Taiwanese name. But he lives, he's an American who immigrated to Taiwan. And he was, because he has intelligently extricated himself from Twitter and all the drama that happens there, he was kind of curious about it. But yeah, first we're going to get into precursors to this new age of female.
Of awesome female superheroes.
Superheroes. And I think the way that I'd put it is that it's before it was in the text of the comics, because there have been females in comics since the dawn of comics.
Yes.
But this is, I think what you're seeing is female creators that have a voice in how they're represented. You're seeing within the text itself talk about feminism and what it means for women to be a part of society and contribute to it in different ways. And so I think initially some of the precursors to this era now, we have what I'm going to call mantle takers. And that's everything from like sidekicks to heroines that are kind of somehow paying homage to a hero that has come before.
And I think it's interesting, now that I was sitting there thinking you brought up sidekicks. Most of the female superheroes I think of automatically are on the DC side. The only ones I can think of off the top of my head on the Marvel side are X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't necessarily consider, I mean, it's not that they're not female superheroes, but they're not female leads. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no real, other than maybe Wolverine, there's no real actual leads in the X-Men series. It's an ensemble mm-hmm. thing, and now right. and then one of them becomes more prominent, but it's not like this is our female lead person. Mm-hmm. As opposed to on the DC side, whether you like how they're portrayed or not, the fact that you can automatically think Wonder Woman, Catwoman, Harley Quinn, there's like several large role leading ladies
mm-hmm.
that are in that side of things.
And I think I'd like to get into that and get your opinion of what how that power is presented. Because I think your mind goes to X-Men because there are these strong icons of how those characters are powerful that are very cemented in
yes,
your mind.
Very much.
Like Storm.
Storm is massive.
And
because
Jean Grey as Phoenix. Those yeah. are powerful images that stick in your head as, you know, she controls storms.
Right.
You know, the Phoenix as a force.
All kinds of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Even Rogue, who was another big one that I really liked. Mm-hmm. Could do a lot of interesting things,
mm-hmm.
At least in the cartoons when I was growing up. She, not as much mm-hmm. in the new movies.
Mm-hmm.
She changed.
Yeah, she got put. That's an interesting little corral too within that, and that goes to more to sidekicks, where they very early on dictated that Wolverine, in order to humanize him, gets these like female sidekicks that he very much is protective of.
Right,
and so that stable has actually changed throughout the years between Jubilee, Kitty Pryde, and Rogue was right. in the new movies. So that's kind of one category. And I think between these two, if anything comes to mind, we can kind of interject. We also get kind of like these spin-off characters like Catwoman and Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn
right.
are villains who I think in order to make statements about feminism have kind of fluctuated back and forth between being villains and anti-heroes. That was one thing that I was asking our mom about, because she is somebody that was around during the first wave of feminism, and so I wanted to kind of get her ideas of how this new, wave of feminism within comics has kind of, how she's been experiencing, whether some of the things have taken care of that characters that she liked and changed them. And I brought up Harley Quinn, and she was saying that part of her character is this flawed, insane romance that she has with the Joker. And recently it's been taken away from her character in order to make a statement about abuse. But it's a very dissonant kind of narrative choice that they've made, because so many people love that character because she is very static, and there are a lot of people that love that character for as shallow as it is.
Right.
There's a part of that that is interesting, and my mom was like, I don't know why they did that to that character. Can you think of any other like femme fatales and those kind of anti-heroes that within comics?
It's a little weirder for me, because I don't really come at it from comics per se. I come at it more from like the cartoons or movies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the stronger female characters I could think of on the Marvel side weren't the superheroes. It was like Mary Jane or, just they were the female inspiration for the hero, but they weren't necessarily the hero themselves,
mm-hmm.
which isn't horrible either, really. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I like that role as well,
mm-hmm.
but I can't really think of any other major ones that pop into my head.
Well, you said Elektra before.
Well, yeah.
I think the film crapped the bed on her character, the initial one that came out in the 2000s.
I liked how they did it in the show a little. I didn't watch tons of the show, but I liked her in the show. Oh, there you go. Jessica Jones. That was another one.
Uh-huh.
She was cool.
Yeah. But I think you were right in the sense that, like, the Marvel on the side of the mantle, takers, the sidekicks, the people that work in conjunction with very strong male characters within X-Men is much more stronger within the Marvel canon than these anti-heroes. It seems like DC very early on kind of staked that claim as a publisher of, we have these femme fatales that are, working against these strong males, and you get these interplay of,
And it's been odd, because in the cartoon, for example, or probably even in the comics, though I haven't read a lot of Batman comics, I think they are played better than they have been in the movies, which I think is part of why it's so, like you were saying, it's happening now because they are giving women more voices to represent them in film and stuff.
Mm.
I think, I don't know if they entered into the comic side of things earlier than they did into film and what's going on now or not. But I didn't mind Catwoman in the cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
She's not exactly, our best role model ever, because mm-hmm. she is on the anti-hero side.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they played her well as that. Mm-hmm. That is a strong female role. It's not a good female role necessarily, but it is a very strong female role, and it's a choice that the females make in those. Like we were doing, I consider Batman very noir. We could talk about that at some point, how Batman fits into noir.
Mm-hmm.
But Catwoman is a very serious femme fatale, like noir level mm-hmm. artistic femme fatale role. It's not just,
And I think,
let's put somebody in leather and have her beat up Batman. Like mm-hmm. she's there. She has other roles than that.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much Poison Ivy, but
yeah, I agree Catwoman that the strength of her character seems to elevate her above some of the other femme fatales within the DC corral.
So there's a few that I think have transcended the stereotype, I guess, but not very many
mm-hmm.
until recently.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, so that gets us into what Comics Gate is, which, as I said, I would not have investigated this on purpose because Twitter drama is something that I think limits drama. The conversation rather than strengthens
it. I have had to very, very seriously hold myself back from yelling at people on Twitter because I know it doesn't
We've had experiences with this too. We won't elaborate, but as far as Comics Gate goes, I had seen somewhat of what people were talking about as the, like, Franz Ferdinand, you know, the shot heard around the world that started this thing. But as I investigated more, it seems like there are a lot of more isolated incidents, and I have an analogy that will help me summarize what this is. But generally, it's kind of a combination of an ethical dilemma and the sales of comics are decreasing. So politics are being put on this industry as this way of explaining why things aren't going as well as they should. And here's a Know Your Meme kind of help me out to summarize this in a more succinct way. Comic Gate is an ongoing debate over the content found in comic books, with some readers arguing that comic book publishers and retailers emphasize progressive politics and diversity over quality of product, which has caused a decline in sales. The debate escalated with the participation of several prominent members of the comic book industry and blacklisting of certain titles. Much like Gamergate, supporters of the movement have been accused of using online trolling and harassment toward women, people of color, and others who oppose their agenda. That's a kind of broad term to it. But because now with social media, you have everybody has access to either pretend or, in the case of comics pros that have a lot of actual real influence over this, you have people joining this conversation and some saying it's about harassment, some people saying it's about the industry and it's dying, and, you know, you mighty, you know, comic pros that have control over this, you're not doing anything about it. You're not really trying to improve things. You're just out for your political agenda. So the way that I kind of isolated it in my mind was to compare it to the church. And my idea was, you always hear people in academia talk about the capital C church and the lower C church. And that's that convention of capital versus lowercase is kind of this idea of there is the powerful thing. So in my mind, I compared it to was capital O oppression and lowercase O oppression. And so think about the church. The church is the Pope, the Catholic, Roman Catholic, archdiocese, bishops, pastors, all these people working together in this power structure. And so a person might say, the problem with the church is that this system is corrupt and we need to improve the political policies and things, and that's going to be what changes the church. Then you have other people that are thinking of church as this abstract flower child like thing where the church can do no wrong because it's you know, all these people are moved by the spirit, and like you have these people on the side that think of it as a very abstract thing. And then I think there's a more of a middle ground where you think of, what can I do in my local church? What can I do as an individual to affect change within the church, both as an embodied idea and an abstract idea? So you think of oppression. You think Trump, the government, police brutality, all of these genuine political problems. And then you think of oppression as this abstract notion. And there are people that are on the conservative side that think oppression is the hierarchy of society putting things in place, and it's a completely figment notion. But in approaching this Comics Gate problem, I can only talk to people as individuals and think of it as individual problems that both you know, I use that idea of oppression and I think of the reality of oppression and try to embody it in different things. And when I think the problems of these, making these things comicsgate and labeling things without there being real conversation that happens, is that people kind of move the needle and make straw man arguments, imagining what, oh, you're a Trump supporter. That immediately means that you're capital O oppression. You embody this idea, I'm going to tear you apart. And then there's conservative people that think you're an SJW because you like Captain Marvel and you're on the side of Brie Larson, who doesn't want men interviewing her about this movie. And because you're not critical of that, you're not part of the system that's actually looking to improve comics and make quality things, because anything that's diverse means that you're not focusing on good writing and good art and that type of stuff. People are making straw man arguments all over the place. And it's because there are actual conversations happening online. And that's why I stay away from these conversations online in a general sense, because it often devolves into mass, you know, gross generalizations about things. So I would like your opinion. I don't know how, like, I know that you're not in the weeds of this, trying to look to start trouble. And I think you would agree with that in a general thing, but I think generally with me saying that, I understand that that makes me sound like I'm on that side of abstract thought, because I think that's generally how my psychology works, is that I'm often thinking more about the abstract and trying to come up with a maxim to try to solve a problem. And I know we're not going to solve the comicsgate problem on this podcast, but I think it's important to talk about, because it's a lot of the mindset that the world out there is going into. And my friend Will, who is doing the Bonzilla podcast, also trying to think about these nerdy movies and franchises in a critical but humble way. You know, he was posting pictures of little girls that are excited about the Captain Marvel movie. And if that doesn't melt your heart and make you think about how, you know, we're kind of poisoning this with all this toxicity, then I don't know if there's hope for you. But generally I lean towards the idea that, like, try to come up with maxims through these conversations. But I know I'm a little bit more on that side of, like, you know, this is a very simple thing, because, you know, I have these little things. So before I ramble too long, is there anything that you want to talk about before we talk about the actual movie?
So I was trying to organize all of the thoughts that went through my head as you were talking. But I think first and foremost, what people need to recognize, regardless of how women have been oppressed or are currently being oppressed and what contribution comics may have to that, I think, as you're mentioning, the decline in comics sales, people need to remember that this is a business. It is a publishing business, and publishing has traditionally changed slower than other businesses. Mm-hmm. Not quite as slow as the church, but slow. And they need to adjust to what the current market is. And if that means the current market wants female heroes and women that don't look anatomically impossible, mm-hmm. and, you know, better representation, then that's what they need to start making. Mm-hmm. And not have everybody whine about it. You can still purchase the comics you like, too. If you purchase enough of them, they will happen. Welcome to capitalism. Put your money into what you want. Mm-hmm. And even in the cases, like, if you're saying that then that breeds bad art or something because you're just trying to look for ways to put representation into your stories, mm-hmm. There's two answers to that. One is there are women writing comics and there are women making comic book movies, and we want to do these things. And we're not doing it because we're trying to shove representation into your thing. It's because we like comic books too. And we like superheroes and we want to make stories about them. You know, like our four nieces went to Halloween this year as Groot and Rocket and Thor, right? Because they like superheroes. They don't care if they're boys or girls. They just like superheroes and they think they're cool. But how much more fun would it be for them if they could go next year as Captain Marvel and Wonder Woman and all these female superheroes? Because they're like, hey, we're women and we can do this stuff. You know, like, it's just it's a good thing for them to see that it's not just men doing these things. But also, I think good art and bad art will still continue to be made in comics either which way. You need to support the parts that you think are good, even if you don't necessarily agree with the message. Because, like, for example, with like V for Vendetta or The Watchmen or whatever, very nihilistic, very terrifyingly depressing things, which are not exactly my favorite stories, but you cannot deny that they were well done, right? Like, you can still recognize this is good art, and it's going to still happen. People will make amazing things. And people who want to be represented will still have their voice represented. I'm just happy that, you know, it seems to be exploding right now. What was the other thing? I think I was going to say more than that, but it's just a lot. And you're right. Conversations like this don't happen on the internet. You can't, I mean, maybe you could have a conversation like this on Twitter.
Arguments are what happen on the internet.
But what happens is just these quick little quips, because you only have 200 something characters to get this point across. And that's really not the place to have these discussions. So, you know, I'm happy that, like you said, it is acknowledged now that women can like comic books and things. So, like, I'm a little older than John. And in the decade before the 90s, or even into the 90s, anybody being nerdy like this was considered outside of the norm. You know, like, you were weird and you're one of those geek kids, and nobody was, you know, weren't popular, and, you know, boy or girl, it didn't matter. But I think it was harder for girls because there were fewer of them, or you were told that you were being a boy because you liked these things. And that's changing now, which is great. But it's also changing because these girls who were like, well, I like these things, but I want to make it so other girls like these things. So how about we have more girls in these things so that more girls can like these things? Because I'm pretty sure they would if they saw, oh, hey, there's girls doing it too. Because it's as hard as it is for a guy to go against the flow and be the, you know, how hard it used to be to not be the athletic one and to be into nerdy things. It was rough. I'm not denying that. But to be a girl by yourself in that is really hard because now you're surrounded by guys. And it's not even just, okay, the athletic guys don't like you, but now the guys who are into the same stuff you like don't like you either because you're a girl. And it was like a double shutout.
Right.
So anyway, all that to say, people like these things, let them make the things that they like and support the stuff that should be happening. If you want women in comic books, buy comic books about women. Buy the good ones. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to happen if it's not funded. Mm-hmm. And that's the way to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. So we're going to take our first break. And then after that, we're going to get into the review of Captain Marvel 2019. So we also, before a quick plug, before we get into Captain Marvel, we're going to be talking about Dark Phoenix. That's next month?
Yeah, I think so.
That's going to be our book for fifth of the month book club. That's our unofficial name for an official thing. Where we get a book on the 5th and then read it by the end of the month, and then we're going to do a podcast episode about it. This month is Native Son.
Yes.
Which we're reading through. And next month, we're going to be talking about the Dark Phoenix saga. So those of you who want to get an early start, or if you don't care about literary fiction in the 1930s, then you can skip ahead to that. And,
to be fair, Native Son is a tough read. And I'm not even reading it. I'm listening to it and stuff.
Misha also bought my nickname for our co-host. You can't call her that.
No, I will hurt you.
She got X-Men Red, it's called.
Yes.
So that's
the return of Jean Grey.
Yeah. So you can get that if you want the extra.
Although I told John I'm very confused because there's a whole bunch of alternate universe versions of superheroes and other ones that I never even heard of. So I have to have
explained to me. You treat the audience like it's like a Shakespearean aside.
Because I'm only talking to you. John can't hear me right now.
All right. So we'll get to the movie. To get to the movie. I thought it was real good.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed it very much. It was fun. It was, like, lighter-ish. I'm assuming they know that all Marvel fans are horrifyingly depressed after the Infinity War movie. So they're like, okay, yeah. All the ones we put out now have to be fun, guys, okay? So this was on the funner side. Not as light as Ant-Man, as the Ant-Man ones.
Yeah, I would say it has dramatic moments.
Yeah.
But
it's not, like, it's not Captain America heavy. Mm-hmm. Stuff. It's in the middle somewhere.
Right. Not espionage level. I was thinking as the story began, we have
the way, there will probably be spoilers. So if you have not seen it yet.
We will attempt not to.
Wait on the rest of the podcast.
We don't have a good track record.
Yeah, we're terrible at this. We spoil everything.
So we're gonna err on the side of caution. Veers. Is a cadet
in the Kree,
Empire.
Empire. Which confused the daylights out of me. Because pretty sure I thought the Kree were bad guys. And Jude Law was one of them. So I'm like, well, they can't all be bad guys.
Well, I thought that was a good... It was a good setup from the other films.
Yeah.
That you expect there to be some kind of tension with the fact that you associate the Kree with Ronan the Accuser... And with all of the villains in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., for those who have been following along with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. Right off the bat, I was kind of thinking of the effects as kind of like the Star Trek reboot.
Yeah, kind of.
In the sense that, like, okay, these are, like affable characters, pretty easy to, you know, like them. The effects were, like, not many movies have... so many aliens that you actually have to give a crap about.
Yeah.
And, like, follow that kind of, like, oh, this is this race, you know, that kind of thing. And as somebody unlike you, who you were a Trekkie, I will watch you watch those things. And we've kind of, as far as sci-fi, gone away from that to very deep character study things like Ex Machina and Annihilation. So... it took my brain a little bit of getting used to, even though, like you were saying, you were a little bit more confused with some of the exposition elements of it, but it was still, as far as the emotional, the drama of it.
Yeah.
I was trying to think, like, what do I have to care about? And,
yeah, because you very much sympathize with all of them at the beginning. You're like, oh, okay, cool. They have a mission. They're trying to save their friend and they're, you know, doing good things.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking, oh, well, maybe I was wrong about something. Uh-huh. What's going on?
I think the only thing that gave, I won't give anything away yet. But there are certain elements where you think, okay, this is a trope of something, like a visual element. And so you're thinking, oh, because this person looks like this, maybe they'll be the bad guy. They're on this, like, reconnaissance mission. And
I think the main established thing that they're trying to do, at least as far as character arcs go, mm-hmm. the main thing that they are attempting to establish at the beginning is that Veers is trying to prove herself.
Right.
To, what was Jude, I don't even remember Jude Law's character's name. I just know it was Jude Law with gold eyes, okay? Like, what else are you going to do? But she is trying to prove herself worthy of becoming a full-on...
Yeah, because we get the setup that there's this
Kree,
thing called
whatever they want to be.
The high intelligence that is the Kree.
The big AI.
Overlord. Yeah, and you see it.
To be fair, at that point, I should have been worried because I'm like, really, who gives their life over to an AI overlord? But I mean, so maybe they're not the best society ever. But anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of that Oz feel. Yes. Where you're just like, oh, they have to go behind a curtain to see this.
Right. And she being. And they appear differently to each person, which is also a very Wizard of Oz thing. Mm-hmm. He appeared differently to everyone who spoke to him.
Right. And they set up that the Skrulls are shape-shifting villains. Assassins. That are villainized by the fact that they're at war with the Kree. So it's more of this war type beginning where there's this mission and everything. And then we get that the one Skrull tries to go to Earth. And there was a moment where I was thinking, I was kind of expecting, as far as writing tropes go, that there would be more of a clandestine thing for the one Skrull. So you have the one Skrull that Veers, aka Proto Captain Marvel, is chasing down. And so I was thinking, like, if you've all seen it in the trailer, if this person pretending to be an old lady, wouldn't it be that much more easy to get, you know, smacked in the face and then not react, or react like an old lady would, where he's like, why did you hit me? So that was kind of like, that kind of took me out of the movie for a little bit. But it's a lot of the, I think the pacing was done very well, where I wasn't, any of those questions that nagged at me were not, you know, like, this is kind of one of my axioms for reviewing, is that as long as it's entertaining me, I don't generally nitpick at that level. Yeah. To like it, and it was very entertaining as it was going. So quickly, any of those little plot things that I was like picking at were just like, you know, this is fun. Like,
and I think it kind of makes sense later when you find out everything, why they weren't exactly the best infiltration team ever.
Right.
But we don't know that at this point. the main points are Veers. At this point, is trying to prove herself, and she has no memory of who she was before 6 years ago.
Right.
And then crash lands on this planet that she doesn't call Earth, that's CR something or other. It's got numbers.
Right.
And but so, you realize very quickly, it's, oh, look, it's Earth, back when there was this old Blockbuster videos.
Yeah, there was a lot of those cute little jokes that, like, that was kind of one of the things that I was thinking about, like, as a writer in terms of the story, I saw it as a challenge if they were going to put more of this feminist stuff within the text for them to have a lighter tone, which Marvel generally seems to have. And I thought they did that balance very well. You get specific moments where there are things like somebody tells her to smile, and right, like that are within the lexicon. Are conversations about guys being toxic about stuff.
But I think,
but it's played as a joke. It's right. Played as this, like, this moment where what she's doing is, you have these little cathartic things that aren't they don't feel ham fisted. No. They don't feel.
And I think a large part of that is the way they wrote her reaction. Like, she is not, because she is a strong person and is not intimidated by men in general. Mm-hmm. And did not grow up in the culture wherein she is being picked on. or even before, when you finally start seeing flashbacks of what she does remember. Her reaction is never to cry or to run off or believe anything that they're saying. Her reaction, even at the beginning when it's that joke about when he's like, oh, come on, honey, smile for me. She's just like ignoring him because you are inconsequential. It's just like, what are you? I don't have time for you. I have a mission right now. Go away. Like, just the idea it could be played that light and be a joke because she is this cosmic strong person, and that is irrelevant right now. Mm-hmm. You know, she had been in any other sort of situation, like, you know, high school kid or something, in a more vulnerable place, that would have been a lot harsher. Mm-hmm. But because she is what she is, she's just like, mm-hmm. Why am I even listening to you?
Right. And I think that the one of the ways that it does this and keeps it where it's not didactic in how it's making some of these different little like commentaries throughout is that it pairs her with Samuel Jackson, who is like, he says to her, "I'm a red-blooded American man." And so like you have this guy that is a symbol of masculinity within film culture.
Yeah, in general. Not just in the Marvel Universe, although yeah. Sergeant Fury is, but he is.
And they both,
in general,
like very well mixed together. Yeah. Brie Larson and him as
actors. They had good chemistry. Like, seriously good chemistry. It was great.
Yeah, it was just a fun like buddy cop.
Buddy stuff, yeah. Buddy cop kind of relationship almost instantaneously. It was great.
Mm-hmm. And so
she's snarky too, mm-hmm. which I liked. I like snarky superheroes. It's the best kind.
And, but we don't get through that. They avoided the temptation of making it that just because Samuel Jackson is this government agent, and like they didn't have to thread the foil of toxic masculinity through every male character.
No.
Like by saying that, I don't mean that that's not a thing. Like, you know, to avoid that idea that like,
well, they had some things like later in other scenes when they meet Carol's friend and daughter, he has some things that he says that are just kind of, and not mean or rude or anything, but just very blanket statements. And the ladies are all like, "Well, you don't know." Like, because he says something about, "How are you going to get up into space?" And she said, "Maybe I'll build myself a spaceship. You don't know." Like, I can do these things. Don't say that I can't. And it's not in a sense of like, "Oh, we're going to start a fight or anything now," but just like, "Oh, hey, remember that we can do these things too." Mm-hmm. Kind of little reminder type stuff. And I'm not saying that to say that he was in any way like bad. Mm-hmm. They were, I mean, it's Sergeant Fury. They wouldn't portray him as that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just little,
but yeah, a lot of
kind of reminder type things of the way people tend to think, not in a bad way, just I don't know what the word is, automatic kind of blanket statements that aren't meant to hurt anybody, but just like they're in the culture. So that's how you say things.
Right. So he wasn't being, that's a good way to put it, that he wasn't being written as a straw man, a symbol of the patriarchy,
right,
type of character. He was written in such a way that in some cases he was willing to trust people when they earned his trust, and he was willing to see the competence in some women some of the time, and in other times he would just say things that guys say sometimes.
Right. And but it wasn't, you know, I never was offended by that at all. And he, when he was corrected, he took it well, and it wasn't, you know, even the bad guys, which we eventually figure out who they are, I don't think they were very straw man. I think they were very realistic pictures of the way a man could think of a woman. And it's not, he wasn't even that horrifying to me. Like, he was wrong. But it would have been just as horrifying if Captain Marvel had been a man and in the same situation. Like, that could have been a guy in that part, and it would have been the same sort of feeling.
Right. So it's the drama of the story of Captain Marvel trying to search for her identity and trying to find out, you know, what of my past has been obscured by this training that I've been going through. And it has these same kind of tropes that would be for a male character. But by virtue of her being a woman, it shows realistically how those things would speak differently to a human woman.
Right. And that's what I think made it different. Like, a man could have been in that part, but would have reacted differently to the situations.
And she certainly doesn't come across as a Mary Sue character. No. I think you're right to say that she had the type of, and they even set it up really early on with how Jude Law says, like, you use humor and stuff you use humor to like hide your emotion. Like, there's a lot of these different things that he tells her, and you're not sure, okay, is he trustworthy? Is he really trying to help her?
Right.
Is he being controlling?
And he is saying a lot of things that, I think, are told to women who are trying to be in powerful positions. Mm-hmm. Like, you are being too run by your emotions. You need to control your feelings. Mm-hmm. You need to, or you aren't in, that was the biggest one, is that she wasn't in control. And that tends to be a thing that is told to women a lot. You're not in control of your emotions. You're not in control of your life or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You need to get control of yourself.
Uh-huh. And so the idea of her being a potential, you have this idea of like, oh, is she, like it isn't playing this as like a master slave thing.
No,
there's part of this idea that as her character, she is, part of this, an active.
She's being
part
mentored.
Of this.
Like, it's not, oh, I'm gonna, you know, remake you into something different because right. You're a woman. So, you can't be. So she's being mentored like anybody else in that group would have been mentored into this system.
Right. So you're it makes sense for this character that she is, you know, capable and to a certain extent and realizes that she has this potential for more power, but isn't like impetuous or what's that word? Like she is this like fully realized adult character who has this potential for more power and doesn't realize yet how to obtain that power. And
they're trying to drill into her that they gave it to her. That's another big part of what the lie is to her. Mm-hmm. One, you are not in control of yourself. Two, we gave this to you. You are not special on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We made you this way.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other creepy lines from the bad guy is that I am trying to make you a better version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, anyway, that's for later on. But the idea that this power that she has is not her own and is not under control,
mm-hmm.
I think are two big things that women are, that is put upon women a lot in powerful positions.
Right. And so I think a good way to compare it is, I like how in the Wonder Woman movies, they're very intelligently putting compassion as this thing, like this person can be compassionate and strong at the same
yes.
time. And rather than it being this idea that there is this large oppressive group and that through acknowledging that there's this group that we need to defeat, then that's how we're going to obtain our power. Rather, there's very touching moments in this movie where like, you see how much she loves the people around her and how that emboldens her to realize who she is, realize that she has the power to protect them and then go to pursue that.
Right.
And so it spends less time trying to create this like progressive manifesto that people imagine that this movie is and really embodies this idea of a female heroine in an exciting way. We're going to take a break and come back with our final thoughts after that. With the magic of editing, we return.
And to you, it was but a moment. But to us, it has been a lovely, fulfilling dinner.
Yes. So where we left off, we were talking about kind of like our I feel like it was a good midway where we were like, I think, and midway through the movie for me is where I kind of starting to really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was liking the interplay between all the characters and
yeah, cause there was a lot of setup,
mm-hmm.
like a lot of setup,
right.
Which is fine. Cause I like when a lot of setup pays off and it does in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fine with that, but it may feel a little off at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So you had a thought?
I have some final thoughts. Are we on to final thoughts?
Yes.
Okay.
We're at the final thought stage.
So
of the proceeding.
I've been trying to think a lot about why.
You might want to back up a little. Apologies for overkilling
the microphone.
Listeners, we were just listening to the podcast, albeit a little loud, but we noticed that there's a little bit of peaking of the audio. But anyway, sorry to interrupt.
So I've been trying to think of why it has been so difficult to have a main female hero, superhero mm-hmm. movie. Because so many of them have flopped so badly in the past.
Yeah.
Part of it, I think, is what we were discussing earlier, where it has not actually been female voices trying to put something into that art. It's been kind of like just taking... It was fan service to the boys reading comics.
Mm-hmm.
So, whatever other opinions we have about, you know, feeding into the fanboys wanting sexy women doing stuff. Because, to be fair, we have already admitted in my, what was it? What was that episode? Five Guilty Pleasures episode that I like the Underworld series. And that is basically a bunch of sexy people running around in skin tight outfits, kicking butt. That's all it is, really. And I am fine saying that I enjoy that. It's not, you know, not the end of the world. But I think the success of Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel now, as I am sure Captain Marvel is going to be fairly successful. And even stuff like Ant-Man and the Wasp, where they gave the Wasp a more central role than previously, and things like that. Especially in Marvel, because it wasn't necessarily as big in Wonder Woman. And I know a lot of people that, when Wonder Woman came out, thought it was the best thing ever, but it's like the first time we've had a female superhero that wasn't the former villain femme fatale stereotype, right? Wonder Woman is not that. And they let her be what Superman was. Not in the current versions, but what he was before.
She's not a mantle taker. It's her.
This is what she is. She is a goddess, and y'all have to deal with it. And it's a similar message in the Captain Marvel one, but not quite the same. So I think part two of the failures of female superhero movies is they are considered half of a romance story, which is fine also, because in Wonder Woman, I think it was done all right. I don't think it was the strongest part of that movie, but there was nothing wrong with saying this woman will do this because she loves someone. But in all the other films, it kind of gives them, even though they're supposed to be the main part of that story, it gives them almost a secondary role because they are in it because they are so-and-so's boyfriend, right? Like Catwoman is only big because she was with Batman, or Elektra was only big because she was with Daredevil. Like they were not on their own, these things. Wonder Woman is slightly different, which is why I think it was better because she was on her own, this thing.
Yeah.
She wasn't because she was that Captain guy. We know who he is because he ended up dating her. Like it was a reversal on that. But what I loved the most about Captain Marvel is they didn't even bother trying to put a romance in it. It's like, we don't need that. She is what she is. And she is going to, by the end of this movie, realize what she is and own that.
Right.
And I think that was something that's been lacking in a lot of female lead things.
I think that she definitely escapes that trap of defining her character by her relationship with this. It's not as much of an homage to what made Marvel important, even though there is a Marvel within the canon of this movie. I was saying that, like, I hadn't really read many of the original Captain Marvel comics. He's a pretty dated Golden Age character. And then they updated, Peter David had a really good run on his son, but it wasn't very popular. I think it got canceled pretty soon after they tried to do it. All that to say that Peter David's an awesome writer and you should read his stuff. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for Marvel. That to say that Captain Marvel is not it's not Mrs. Pac-Man.
Right.
She's not a female version of a male character. And at the same time, I really like the tertiary characters that they created around her and how they, like, so Lashana Lynch was the actress who played her wingman. You see her in the trailer in terms of them. She's like the goose from the, what's that? The movie with Tom Cruise.
Oh, Top Gun?
Top Gun. Everybody's been referencing that because it's 90s. Yeah. It's fighter pilots and stuff. So Lashana Lynch was an amazing actress. She really nails those. Like, like watching those, it reminded me of like those 90s sci-fi shows that you were watching where regardless of this person having a rubber, you know, mask on, they really nail this like workman actor thing of like, you know, I'm going to make this gobbledygook that's on the script in the script feel real. Mm-hmm. And that actress really brought that reality to those different moments. And it's something that I think was actually lacking in the Wonder Woman movie, for as much as the it was cathartic, the different like action scenes that she had. I think, like you were saying, it wasn't the strongest part of that movie. With this one, I really believed that her like that character looked up to her and was so like amazed at her, and that they really had this mutual, like, you know, respect of each other. And it also puts her daughter in there as somebody that, you know, is the one of the catalysts for her to complete this journey. So that was a really strong thing. And as far as the romance angle, I was thinking, like, are they gonna do that? And I think it was more a result of most of the time I'm used to seeing this female character be validated by the fact that she ends up with a person at the end of the movie. And as much as I tried the whole, you know, axiom of the Bechdel test and that women can't talk about men or be in the same room with them or something, and that's supposed to be somehow like a one-stop answer to that problem. At the same time, it was refreshing to see a woman that works well with other men, in some cases, in most cases, is competent enough to face these different challenges. And those moments when it was very obvious that they're going for this thing, I could see how it could be very gratifying for a young girl. Like that's what I would say to the people that are looking at this as some kind of prescriptive thing. This is supposed to be so that children can understand that a woman can do the job just as well as a man can. And the simplicity is not because these people are, you know, following this thing up like a gospel. It's supposed to be so that children can understand this message and put it in a very simple way so that they can understand it. While at the same time, you get really weird things like Annette Bening as this strange, like, Antichrist type thing, where she's like, you know, they're trying to bet. So, like, you get all these really ambitious sci-fi ideas and that classic sci-fi character, while you also have this, you know, progressive message, this idea of hope and that a woman can embody this idea. Yeah.
I think the best way that they did that was and this is a bit of a spoiler, but it was kind of in the trailers too, so whatever. But the montage of her picking herself back up,
yeah, very
was well done. Very powerful. And I think that gets that message across to, especially to kids, in a way that they can understand. They know what it's like to fall off their bike.
Right.
They know what it's like to have some kid tell them, oh, you're a girl, you can't do X. And being able to see her, who is this Sophia, who hopefully we will get you to see our niece's reactions to this movie soon. But she's already like, I saw her on fire and I wanted to see it even more. Like, this chick is awesome. And so you can see that there's this awesome chick who also had to fall off her bike and get picked on by kids and get told she can't do these things. But she got back up and she kept doing it.
Yeah, if you don't follow us on Facebook, do so now. Because I'm going to post a little snippet of Arnie's telling the Three Little Pigs story.
Oh, yes.
In a way that rivals some TED Talks that I've seen.
At the age of three, So, you know,
yeah,
this kid's got skills.
This, yeah, it's going to be an exciting type. So we're going to do a standalone bonus episode where our nieces talk about Captain Marvel, how, what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it. And hopefully that'll you know, I want to submit them to the next panel that we do at a convention so that they can, you know, they can be our moderators.
There you go.
It was interesting the way that it ended, because I feel like, I think ambitious is probably the right word for it, because it was a very, at first I was like, is this like anticlimactic? And I saw how there's a spaceship that goes like very cartoonishly up into the stratosphere. And I thought of Space Jam. I think, you know, what, that dramatic moment, I think it's in line with how the rest of the movie yeah. operated. It was trying to show that she's a confident character, and that, for fans of Indiana Jones, there's a very famous scene with him. And so that's a little Easter egg for you to watch out for. But overall, I thought it was really, well done. And, there were some people that were saying that it was, the visuals were a little bit, muted. They were saying that the colors didn't really pop. And I think that there are certain scenes in the, I think a lot of the visuals thematically change from the beginning to the middle.
It's true.
And at the middle, you really get this nice cathartic thing of like, she didn't have a colorful costume and now she does.
And
really means something within the story.
Yeah.
Also,
I want to give it total props for having her act opposite of Jude Law and not having sexual tension happen.
Uh-huh.
Like, that was amazing, because that would have changed the tone of their relationship completely,
right.
I think. It would have changed the meaning of her story if that had happened, and they managed to do it. And, I mean, if you have an actor, I mean, you have Jude Law, for heaven's sakes, in this guy's role. Like, you're thinking that's going to be a thing. I thought it was going to be a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the, like, they have fight scenes, they have all this stuff in places that most movies would have put that in. And there was no subtext like that, at least not to me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe other people might pick that up differently,
the only thing I picked up was that they're both very good looking.
Well, there's that.
But there was nothing within that, they're right, in the sense of within the movie. There was no text.
Right. I got, like, no subtext at all from any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not with her, with anybody. She was, like, I have a mission, like I was saying. Like, all the rest of this is irrelevant. I got my job to do. I got to figure this out. And that's it. And I thought that was really well done, that they did that.
Yeah. So, I think that there are certainly, excuse me, different things, like the, all the, leading lines and stuff within Thor Ragnarok, and all those, you know, the musical cues and stuff like, so, like, if you don't like the 90s, and you don't like the...
and if you don't have a soul.
there's certainly things about other Marvel movies that if you try to compare apples and oranges, are going to look different. But I was surprised at how much fun I had.
Yeah.
And
I kind of feel like she's going to be, if anybody gets along well with Captain America, it's going to be her. Like, everybody else has been kind of keeping him, not that he's really an outsider, but he was before anyway. Now he's all darker, grimmer than he used to be because of issues.
Uh-huh.
But like, you know, before I was all excited to watch the Avengers because I knew they were all going to clash.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel kind of bad for Captain America, who's this poor dude stuck from like the 40s. And it's like, now I'm stuck with all this crazy nonsense happening.
Uh-huh.
But she also is a bit out of time and very honorable and a soldier as well. And I think they're going to I was just so excited when she showed up in the final scene with the rest of them. Like, it's real that she's there. And she's going to be their friend, because she seems like that kind of person.
Right. And I think that's the biggest thing with Marvel movies is if it can integrate this Lego block into all the other Lego blocks, and you're just like, oh, it fits perfectly.
Yes, this is exactly how this is gonna work.
You know,
because it was like her and Black Widow facing off, and I'm like, okay, then let's do this thing.
Yeah, that's what I would say is that they're I think that there are people like I brought I think up.
She's gonna get a kick out of Thor though. She's gonna crack up. Stop fangirling
for a second. I mentioned leading lines out of nowhere. So some people might not know what that means. I was talking about the Jack Kirby had a lot of artwork that he would do that was like overly detailed in order to show like these complex cyber cities and stuff like that, like really weird stuff. So the I think that that's the thing is that this is a newer part of the Marvel like canon. In the same way as, like, maybe, like, a character like Jessica Jones and things are. So I don't think that this is for the fanboys as much as other things. But as we're talking about, that was one complaint among the comic gate people is that things are changing and it's very uncomfortable for older fans to see characters like this change. There's not Captain Marvel anymore. From your childhood, there's a new Captain Marvel.
Right.
So
I had to put up with 3 different Spider-Men in my lifetime. You can get over it.
Let's not chide them.
Not even a little bit.
But
and we've already ranted about Star Trek, so whatever.
that's kind of my point is that the this new thing that's happening is for us all to play together. So yes. Let's play nice, kids.
I will try.
Yeah. This is also me talking to myself because I've had the temptation just as much as anybody else to yell at somebody on Twitter because they don't get it.
Yeah.
But and as much as we can try to play in the sandbox together, let's do that. So yeah, those are our final thoughts. Again, look forward to our first fan frequency that's going to be with our little buggers that are
the little rugrats ankle biters
that are going to watch Captain Marvel with us and talk with us about it. Please write to us at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com to give us your thoughts about Captain Marvel and also the Dark Phoenix saga that we're going to investigate together on the next Fifth of the Month book club after this month. So,
yes, because this month is Native Son by yes. Richard Wright. Richard Wright?
Yeah, I got it at the library on audiobook, so investigate that.
There's this app called Hoopla, and you can borrow stuff for free.
Yes, the Philadelphia Library made its own.
Shout out to the free library, O'Philly.
And also, we have a writing club that we do at our local branch, the Torsdale Library.
If you go to my website, at momtoast.com, there is now a current events tab with a calendar, and you can find out when Write Club is.
You can also, like I said, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Unboxing Story. Also, you can support us by going onto our Unboxing Story Anchor page. We put this podcast out for Anchor. You heard the advertisement earlier. We love their services. We thank them for supporting our channel, I'm talking like a YouTuber, our podcast. You can support us at anchor.fm/unboxy-story. You can contribute anywhere from $2.99 to $9.99. It really goes to help us to meet you guys at like conventions and writers' conferences like the one we have coming up. It's the Write Stuff conference.
Yes.
That's
it's the Greater Lehigh Valley Writers, I don't know if it's club, convention, whatever they call themselves. It's yeah. their writing conference.
Melissa has an emergency going on now on the screen.
Sorry, it's just not functioning properly.
We're going to go to the Write Stuff conference, so if you also are a writer, we'd love to see you there and talk about stories like we do every week. So we'll see you next time. Goodbye.